Hello, welcome to MVP Tech Talk, Career, Coding, and Cookies. My name is Jeff Hicks. I'm a longtime PowerShell MVP, and my partner in crime here today is fellow MVP Greg Shields, a Hyper-V MVP. And today we're going to be talking about PowerShell toolmaking. And that is a topic that a lot of people want to know about, and Greg wants to know about it, and that's why he's here with me today.
Yeah, in fact, let's have some fun with that, actually.
Okay,
so PowerShell toolmaking, I don't know. There's a lot of people out in the world these days that, I mean, the embrace of PowerShell just keeps getting wider and wider, and IT pros of all sorts. But there are a lot of people out there that I think are in this sort of interesting phase where they can get service and they can get process and they can craft even some basic modules and do some pretty cool stuff with scripting. But when you say something like tool making, it kind of makes my brain explode. Help me understand what you mean about that shift from making a script and making a tool.
Okay, so the way that I think about tool making is, in your PowerShell experience, you start by typing commands interactively, like you're a Hyper-V MVP. So you could run like get VM,
right,
pipe it to some other things, and get information about your virtual machines,
create
on your
networks
server,
and all the usual
all that
stuff.
Now, the first step you would take, instead of you having to type all of that all the time, you want to save some typing, so you put it in a script. Save some typing. If it's something that happens all the time, you go on vacation, you can give it to your coworker, they can run the script, you get that reusability consistency. Modules kind of take that a little step further,
sure,
and kind of tool making falls into that. So when I talk about tool making, it's really taking something that you have created that may be automated in terms of a script or module, but turning this more into a PowerShell-like command, a tool or utility, and it may be a set of tools that you can use to do your thing.
So it's at some point, you know, back in the old days, back when people were writing VB scripts, that was always the fear, is you would write this beautiful thing and then you would go off somewhere and you'd hand it to somebody and they would execute it in a way that it just was not in the meant in the way it was meant to be executed. So what you're saying is I could take some sort of automation and just wrap it in some sort of code and essentially kind of shrink wrap this in such a way that someone else could consume it?
Exactly. And one of the most important things I tell people when I do training and speak at conferences is, when you're building a tool, the most important thing is you have to think about who is going to be using it.
The consumer.
The consumer. I mean, it could be you, but it could be you're building a tool that you're going to hand off to the help desk or an intern or something you're delegating to a user. So the most important thing, so we can't teach you PowerShell toolmaking here in the time that we have, so I just want to talk about some concepts, things to keep in mind as you're,
sure,
opening up scripting. So number one for me is, who is going to be using that tool? What are their expectations? How much PowerShell do they know? If there is an error that happens, are they going to freak out? How is it something that you can just let it go? Or do you need to take the time to be robust about it? Years ago, I worked for a Microsoft Gold partner. We had a number of developers on the team, and we had a client who his test for if a code was good, it was a keyboard test. And so he you know, they bring in the application, and he'd bring up the keyboard, and he'd smash the keyboard. And if the code, whatever, you know, passed that keyboard test, he was happy with it.
Seems violent,
saying,
but it works.
It does. I'm not saying we have to do that in PowerShell, but,
right,
but the most important thing is you have to think about who is going to be using your
tool. So that's number one.
That's number one.
So if I'm building these tools, do I have more than one module sometimes, or are they modularized?
No.
Or multiply modularized.
That could be. So second, probably most important thing when you're building a PowerShell tool is you don't want to code yourself into a corner. You don't want to write something that has hard-coded values like computer names or subnets or domain names. All that information.
Parameterize everything.
You should parameterize it so that it can be passed through. Mm-hmm. Or if you need to set a default value, say 9 times out of 10, I'm going to use, you know, this domain name, which you can even dynamically pull from the computer if you want. Okay, so you don't have to be hard-coded. It makes it easier to reshare, mm-hmm, your code. But maybe let's say it's 9 times, I got to do something with my child domain or some other domain. You don't want to have to be rewriting your code. So you want to think about, I have this thing where my little challenge is to never rewrite the same line of code twice.
Makes sense.
So I'm always thinking ahead, even if I'm going to be changing something along the way, what can I set early on? So maybe I just have to change one little thing. For those of you familiar with PowerShell scripting, maybe you're familiar with the term splatting. I'm a big fan of splatting, way of passing a hash, taking a hash table of values and passing them to a command. So I can dynamically build things really quickly without having to recopy and paste the same pieces of code.
Sounds like, you know, people talk about PowerShell being an object-oriented language, and it sounds like what you're talking about here is creating even your own tools that are object-oriented so that you can link them together and reassemble them in different ways to accomplish different tasks.
Many of the times that I'm building a tool, I am wrapping up some existing functionality with a commandlet. Mm-hmm. For example, getVM has no way of itself, there's no parameter that says, show me only the virtual machines that are running.
Okay.
You'd have to pipe it to where object and add in a filtering thing. So I built my own little version of getVM that basically adds in that little tiny bit of functionality. Hmm. So I called it, in this case, I think I call it getMyVM, so it doesn't conflict with the existing one. And then I can do getMyVM-state running. And it basically wraps up the underlying PowerShell commands, but saves me from having to type, or having someone else have to type, that complicated where object syntax.
So number one is anticipate your audience. Number two is parameterize everywhere, if possible.
Right.
Is there a number three?
Number three, and this is something you'll hear about all the time if you are active in the PowerShell community, is we always talk about when you're writing code. Now, this is just a text file, right? You could write it in Notepad. You should at least use the PowerShell IEC as a bare minimum. There are new things coming from Microsoft
right.
that you know we'll be getting into. But you want to write the code for the person who's going to have to maintain it.
And legibility.
Right. Again, that could be you. Mm-hmm. You may come back to a code, say, in 6 months. But you want to be able to look at that and understand, what did I just write? What is going on here? So one of the things we always recommend as a best practice is we always use full commandlet names, full parameter names. Now, if you use a tool like that, PowerShell IEC, you have IntelliSense and tab completion. So it's not taking you a lot of time, and you only have to type it once.
That's true. That's
so
true.
If you see, you know, you may not be the most brilliant or really experienced PowerShell scripter, but if you see a script that has a line get-service,
you understand what it is.
Right. Versus if you see GSV, you go, okay, what is GSV? Where do I go get that? Some of the aliases in PowerShell are a little cryptic, the question mark and the percent symbol,
right.
the two that I just cringe whenever I see that. So it may look like it's taking you a long time, but at least it's meaningful.
Exactly. And then that when you hand that off to somebody, the person that you hand it off to is going to be able to consume in their own brain what they're looking at, and then potentially even manipulate it for their own uses.
Right. They may take that code, and again, it could be you coming back in 6 months. And I've started doing this now. I'm going back and revisiting scripts and tools that I wrote, you know, 5-6 years ago, back in the days of PowerShell version 2. Now we have all these new functionality in V4 and V5. And go, oh, okay, and I can fix this, but I can only do that successfully because I follow those best practices and I have comments about what it is that the code is doing, and I use full commandlet names so I don't have to struggle, go, what the heck was I writing 5 years ago?
It sounds to me like there's a number four here, and let me see if I can guess what the number four is. It involves community, doesn't it? And sharing what you've learned and getting out there and letting people know that, hey, I've created something and it could potentially be useful for everyone else in the world,
yeah,
am I right?
Sharing is huge. I have started, even though I publish a lot of stuff on my blog and places I write like Repetri.com and stuff that happens in my Pluralsight courses, well, I'll share examples. I've started publishing some of my more reusable projects on GitHub. So I'm kind of a late joiner to the GitHub party, but it's not that difficult. I've had some good feedback on stuff that I've posted. I'm working on some new things, and they'll show up on GitHub. But even if you're just posting your own blog article,
right,
or sharing something with a coworker, again, I encourage you to use the full commandlet names, parameter names. Don't, even though you can type something really short at the console using all those shortcuts, that's perfectly fine. But when you are writing it for posterity, mm-hmm. you need to make sure that it is, I can read it and it tells a story.
So PowerShell tool making, it sounds like the best practices in PowerShell tool making are everything to do with writing your code in ways that it makes sense not only for yourself, but also potentially for yourself down the road, and even other people out in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that difficult. If you can type the command and get it to run, you copy and paste it into your PowerShell script, and that's how you start building the tools.
Wow.
So I guess my last wrap up here is, when you go to start building a tool, don't just open up PowerShell IC or Visual Studio or whatever product you're using and just start typing commands. Work with what I call known good building blocks. Break it down into small chunks and say, okay, I need to get all the virtual machines that are running on this host that are running. So you type your command that gets that. Good, that works. You can plug that piece in. Then go on to the next piece. If you try to write everything all at once and then press run, it's probably not going to work.
Right.
And you won't know. Okay,
you'll never know where it's at.
Which part failed? So I take a very iterative approach to writing my tools.
So you heard it here. Jeff Hicks, PowerShell toolmaker extraordinaire. I'm Greg Shields with Pluralsight. Jeff, this has been fantastic.
Yeah,
I've learned a lot.
I'm
happy to have the opportunity.
Thanks for coming by and helping me out talk about PowerShell toolmaking. Active on Twitter, Google+, Facebook. So find us if you got other questions about PowerShell.
Thanks. You.